My only addition is with regard to the announcement of the election that you, the president announces the election and obviously with the electoral commission. So it's something that is not in our constitution. We don't have a date of the election, as opposed to other forms of democracy where you have a constitution saying the date and then people fight not to have elections. But in every 5 years, even though there is no date, you always have elections. Whether the president likes it or not, but they always say they must have elections. So I think that is one thing that I wanted to add. So even if you're not going to win the election, you still announce it. But in other countries, you know, you fight to remain in power.
Thank you very much, sir. Well, I'm happy with that presentation. Oh, thank you very much. I'm sure there are questions from our visitors or clarifications as well. But before I give you the opportunity, we have Mr. Patrick Kauma Mane. He is from Uganda. But has been waiting here for I don't know how many years. We are not taking him as our son because he's been here for too long. He's with the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees here. And he does a good job. Welcome, Patrick. Over to you, Chen.
Thank you so much for that, Chen. Thank you.
will also depend on the honorable member, okay, whether they more detailed on it, but on a particular area, then perhaps we can then expand it from that. But I think the area that perhaps one needs to emphasize on is that given the nature of our democracy and the history of our country, you can imagine how what is the level of distrust when the system began, and you compare that with the road that we have traversed until now, then you realize that where we are a world class electoral system. That's how I would define it. There have been calls by the opposition, I'm saying by an opposition in its totality, all the those who could not win election in a particular area, they would start saying we have rigged the election. It was a norm, we knew that. But I think that in the recent elections you'll find that that has slowly diminished because of the level of trust which has been built by the engagement and participation of parties at the level of the PSC, which is the party liaison committee, which are convened by the ASA, by the IEC, who sets the agenda, but then it gets determined, I mean it gets endorsed and adopted by the committee, by the party representatives when they attend the PSC. So the agenda is not a cast in stone when they get there. I'm hoping that that makes sense. So when they get to the meeting, they then decide what should be discussed at the meeting, which obviously then for the way of engaging parties to recommend what agenda items they want to see appear on the agenda. Hence, it is easy for members of the public to download it as well afterwards if they want to see what has been discussed. But I think more importantly is that IEC allows members of the PSC to get their agenda online prior to subsequent to their agenda being agreed to. The whether the role of the opposition is recognized, yes, we are recognized. And we play a role in many committees, including in this case, Home Affairs, where we sit. We do, no one says you can't bring an item to discuss. But also it depends on the party position on each of these items. For instance, in 2010, we dealt with the pre-legislation in this committee, which some of them we agreed on and some we could not agree. We may sometimes find that we all agree when we get, and then there's another caucus, the other members come back and say no. We don't agree. Or we get a surprise in Parliament in the plenary that this member will now change their position. And now you ask me yourself, is this the same honorable program that I was sitting in the committee? Because we're looking at the manner in which he lambasts and the manner in which he contrasts what he has agreed to in the committee. Then you start not trusting me. So it's quite an exciting principle in terms of recognizing the opposition. But also the target member field, where we have the right to submit the target member. Any member of parliament can submit a proposal to amend or to introduce a new legislation in the form of a target member field. And recently there's been controversies in terms of whether this is the way through the committee that has been established by Parliament, where one can submit to that committee or you submit to the Speaker and it must go to Parliament directly and introduce it there. So there's been a court ruling which then empowers every member to go straight to Parliament instead of the select committee or an actual committee that has been established by Parliament for that purpose. So I think there's enough space for opposition really to raise their issues. We've got systems in Parliament, promotion, member statement in Parliament, so you can rise and say what you want to say. Then it depends on the SABC or any media whether they want to tell the TV that this is what they can say. I think and the issue of how long does it I think the other area which perhaps one would like to touch on that to qualify the statement by Honourable Grant, that how accessible is the IEC from the local level to national level. IEC engages political parties. So there's no level where you would say that you don't know, because therefore a particular section of IEC that will engage at any other level to engage the stakeholders at that level, including the civil society and these who participate. And also when there is election, you've got 30 agents, and that's it in each polling station. So even before the IEC gives us the result, we would know more or less in a particular ward when it's local government elections, how we have performed. Which makes it easier for us to say, no, they have cheated us. Because then the 30 agents sit and count the elections and observe the counting of the elections with the IEC. So it's quite a very exciting process, because by that time you don't see. When it's elections, you know that we know we don't see. And those who win will party the whole week. And those who lose will cry the whole week. So it happens. And we always appreciate that time. Even though it's difficult to contain, but when you read the proof, it's very nice. The last part which I'd like to talk on is the role of the police and the army in the process. I'm sure if the question was, what is their role in the electoral process, what's the campaign? They are to maintain peace and order during the electoral process, during the campaign, and arrest those who are meddling in the affairs of the electoral process. Yeah, so we have quite a fair process. Remember, in terms of the SADC protocol of managing elections in a democratic context, it does become important to ensure that the process leading to election and the environment under which the campaigning is taking place, that process has to be a process that every member or every political party gives prudence to and say, no, we are proof. It was free and fair campaigning. So that the election day can also be congruent to that process. Otherwise, if there is problems with the campaigning period where people have been victimized and beaten, then you can say, no, we have a problem. And in South Africa, we don't have such a situation. Where it occurs, the police, they take their role seriously, and the army plays that role. And we've never had a situation where we say the army must come in for that election. Normally, we work with the police.
Seen as unbiased every way.
by all parties. And what I see, and I've been a member of PLCs in the past, so that's party liaison committees, they bend over backwards to make sure that every single party feels accommodated. So that we don't have a situation pre-94 where certain people were favoured and others were marginalised. So they really work very hard to make sure that every party, even if it's the smallest, most insignificant party that has no representatives in Parliament, maybe has one councillor in the whole country, that they will feel accommodated and welcome and that part of the process and part of the democracy. So that's the rationale of why we have the system the way we do. And the PLCs, those liaison committees, are so vital to the function of the IEC because all parties are represented on there. Your political party and even have no representatives who are sit on those PLCs where you've consulted. Even to the extent of, for example, the presiding officers at each voting district, the parties are given lists of the proposals by the IEC who these people are, and if you have an objection, for whatever reason, you're allowed to submit that. So there's complete, always consultation so that there's an element of trust that all political parties feel that the part of the process will be, if there's something that could go wrong, it's preempted. As far as the setting of the agenda is concerned, there are things happening in different provinces all the time. So, for example, I happen to know that in Johannesburg there's going to be a by-election in April. Now, that's irrelevant to anywhere else. It's not even relevant to the rest of the province, it's just irrelevant to the city. So the city PLC would concern itself with that and be on their agenda and the consultation and the process we run via that level. So that's the rationale. If it's obviously provincial, national level, that concerns the prescriptor, the issues that affect them at that level. The other aspect I want to bring in that Honourable Garnett mentioned, for the issue of gender representativity and so forth. And again, I think the rationale is that it's left to each of the parties to decide. So that you don't want to hint to what, as I mentioned before, where there's a potential or even a perception that a government is trying to marginalise everybody. So if there's a particular political party, and we do have parties in Parliament that have no women, if they wish to do that, that's fine. The electorate will see this and will make their choice based on what their party is, what their actions have done. And they'll see that this list is biased to men only, for example. So, and in fact, you know, it comes out in results and so forth. So, again, I think it's carved in our constitution and our history where no one gets felt out or alienated as if they're second-class citizens. I think that's very important. And then as far as the campaign is concerned, it's also that I think it's a very healthy thing too if a political party wants to campaign throughout the entire period. I think it's a healthy thing for voters and an opportunity to see what this party is about or not relocate it and it's a longer option. So that's, I think that would be the rationale why there isn't a specific campaign period. Because theoretically, actually, a party should be campaigning all the time. And I think the bigger parties actually do that. They should be campaigning and publicising themselves all the time. So the voters see what other choices they have available for the coming election day. And then the other point I just want to bring up is the proportional representation system. And the system that we have ensures that even the smallest parties, or let me put it the other way around, that no vote is lost. So if, for example, you are a voter and you vote for a very small party that gets very few votes, that the potential for those votes being lost is very small. Because of the system we have, that even a fraction, the percentages of fractions, are accounted for. And as a result, in Parliament we do have political parties where there's only one representative. Whereas if it was a constituency system, they would not be in Parliament. Because they just wouldn't have enough votes in a particular area. I must just point out, a lot of people actually don't know this, maybe Honourable Gow might know this, there's only in the 50s, you know, the National Party got into power in 1948, there's only in the 50s when the National Party actually got more votes, than real votes in the opposition. And a lot of people don't know that. The National Party at the time had won more constituencies, but actually had less votes, than real votes, than the opposition at the time. So again, those are the flaws that come PR system as we stand ensures that even the minority's smallest niche party has the potential to be a party. I think that's all I think. Oh, the election of the president. We don't have presidential elections. Our constitution doesn't allow for that. What the constitution does say, Honourable Brown is a lot cleverer than me on this, is that the parliament will choose amongst themselves a member to become the president. So nominations in the House are presented, and then each MP has an opportunity to vote. Because it's such a restricted voter base, if you like, there's only 400 of us, and it can very carefully and easily be monitored, because there can only be 400 possible votes, and the results are a lot easier. It's also elected by that House, and so it's done there and then in the first sitting. I hope I've answered most questions.
Thank you.
Such issues that there's also these other issues that we have to look at and
the law, everything that we do is to think the systems of the law. The other thing will then be other reasons will be elaborated further by that regard. But we also have a question that says, what do we do to ensure that each member toes the line in terms of the leader? The system we have in place is in such that as political parties within parliament we have what we call standpoint, where we will reflect on issues individually as a party and come to portfolio committee meetings where we exactly to what is our position in terms of our party and the parliament. But at the same time, we have the code of conduct of each member, we have the rules committee which is dealing with rules that are ensuring that we toe the line when there are things that we have. And that, all those other elements that are there will then constitute in ourselves having to take a certain position and then ensure that that particular position we follow. In terms of party discipline, then the party focus will be what direction. In terms of government decision, then your leaders will then engage and you have what you call, what is this new kind of thing? Chief Whips Forum, and where they will then agree, the chief whips of different parties will meet and also talk on issues and agree or agree to disagree on issues, but take those issues forward. Then that's how we will get to certain decisions changing our way forward. The last one is in relation to the media. And I'm glad because I saw even other countries that begin to engage on the issue of the media. To say what role should the media play to ensure fairness, and particularly as part of the media. And we are also ensuring what we are talking fairness. We are also talking, we should not exclude the fact that the dignity of an individual or a certain organization must still be restored. And some of the people may read that as inclining towards a certain party position. But the media must not jump the issue. That's what we are trying to do as this government. To say, even if there's an issue, if it pertains to me as great, the media must not jump into conclusion before it gets the facts correct, because by then it shall tarnish my image and my integrity, and it will be very difficult to mend that. So that's all what we are doing, but I think we have a media that will, at the end of the day, get taken into consideration where we are coming from, like Honorable Fink has said. So I think
thank you, Chair. I think Honorable Grace covered the media, which I wanted to say something, but I think it's covered. But then on the issue of party agents, I just wanted
new parties without any representation, because we, how many parties do we have? We have, no, how many parties do we have in South Africa? Hundreds, more than 100 parties. So from the state side, but then there's the other question in obviously whether, no matter where you get your money from, whether it's private or whether it's the state, maybe private donors, whether there should be a limitation, maybe that's something that
being mandated
people who were there from my family, people who were at the distance of home, certain things, who start to see my house, who start wanting to be held by myself. And if I know those people are old, the issue would be what is more pressing to me than that doesn't come to your people. But if I work with those people, people will start seeing again that this lady is using the position to be killed on other things. So I think the thing we need to look at other things, that it's not easy to tell you if someone is actually humanity because of the position. Whether minister, but as a member of parliament, just ordinary member of parliament, I've known many people that I never knew in my area, just because I'm a member of parliament. And it can be deceived. Someone can determine that and say, I'm losing my position, because if I have those people, obviously, most of them will then want to come around me, come around the fact that I'm with it, and also support that particular party. So the issue of incumbents is not that much an issue, but the issue is the kind of service you give to the people that you serve or the people that you lead, because it will then determine the kind of organization where you come from, particularly if you are then doing what your organization would want you to do. And I think I wanted to just run on this one and make sure, because it's an issue. Not an issue only in this community, but outside these walls, where people then are unable to actually draw a line in terms of someone pushing things. It's not like I get to
Thank you.